Food is connection, food is friendship, food is a certain kind of love. So journalist and Pulitzer Prize finalist Tommy Tomlinson posits in his new book, The Elephant in the Room, One Fat Man's Quest to Get Smaller in a Growing America. His memoir is at once a meditation on weight and identity and a candid and sometimes brutal look at the everyday experience of being constantly aware of your size, obsessing over where you're going to sit at baseball games and restaurants, or dreading the lurch of a packed subway and the guilt and fear that result. Again, the name of the book is The Elephant in the Room, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Tommy Tomlinson to the roundtable this morning. Tommy, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's my pleasure.
A longtime reporter and columnist for the Charlotte Observer, and you've done a lot of journalism. What brought you to tell your story?
I got to a point in my life where I felt like I had to change. I had gotten up to 460 pounds, which is what, you know, medically is defined as morbidly obese, which means if you don't change something, you're going to die. I've been living with that for a long time and trying to deal with it. The sort of inciting event, I guess, was also the death of my sister, who was older than me, but also had problems with obesity. And she had some complications from a problem with her legs that was caused by her weight, and that's basically what killed her. And I could see my own future when I saw what happened to her, and I thought if I didn't do something about this now, if I didn't change, I wasn't going to have many more chances.
So as you began to make changes, you obviously were part of a very large club of Americans who are trying to deal with their weight and their body image and ultimately their relationship with food. Did you have specific goals in mind as you started this process?
My main goal was just to try to find a sustainable way for me to lose weight. You know, I tried any diet that you could probably name off the top of your head, all the popular ones I've tried over the years, and different exercise programs, fitness programs. And what I came to believe about those things is that they're all effective in the short term, but then none of them are really effective in the long term because it's just hard to sustain that sort of life. And so what I set out to do was try to find a way, sort of the kind of the slow food movement people have where they're not, you know, they're not throwing as much stuff in the microwave anymore. I wanted to try to do the slow, you know, fitness movement where I could sort of sustain it over time, lose a little bit and a little bit and a little bit, and hope that that accumulated into something meaningful.
So along the way, and as this book tells us, it, not only your story, but you meet up with a lot of people and you start to look at what put you in this position and what puts many others in this position.
I think a big part of it culturally in this country has been the move from basically blue-collar work to white-collar work. My mom and dad worked in cotton fields when they were young, and they moved up to factory jobs when they were a little older, but their whole lives they worked with their backs and their hands. And so they could come home at night and eat, you know, a plate of fried chicken or a, you know, half a dozen biscuits or whatever, and they would not gain weight because they burned off those calories every day. Well, by the time my generation came around, most of us had desk jobs. And when you have the same food that your family has eaten for generations, it has all this cultural weight and symbolism to it, and as an expression of love in many families. But you're not burning it off the next day at work. That's how we get overweight. And to me, that was a big part of the insight I had in this book, was that I was following those cultural norms, but I wasn't having the same results.
One of the things, and you mentioned this toward the end of the book, so I don't want to hopscotch too much and jump ahead, but I think it's important as if we talk about goals. Your goals were fairly modest. I mean, there. You mentioned there's magazines that say, you know, I've lost 150 pounds in a year. You weren't going after that.
Part of the reason for that is those people who lose 150 pounds in a year often gain it back the next year. because our bodies are designed to fight crash dieting. Your metabolism actually changes in a way because your body still thinks that it's, you know, caveman times and you need to eat more and more to stave off the long winter ahead. And so our bodies actually fight us when we try to lose weight a lot of times. And so what I try to do and what I have tried to do is basically fool my body into thinking that I'm not actually on a diet. And if I lose weight slowly enough and accumulate it in small incremental ways over time, it's much less likely for me, I believe, to fall victim to that sort of yo-yo dieting where people lose a lot and then gain it back really quickly. So that's what I was trying to avoid.
So you were looking basically about 20 to 25 pounds a year, but one of the problems that you talk about, and I'll admit, I mean, I looked at it in the book too, is well, okay, of how much we pay attention to the number, right? Of oh, well, how much did he lose? How much can you lose? What is, I'm a big guy. I think, oh, wow, if he can, you know, what can I lose? And you look at the numbers, and that's really part of the problem, isn't it? Of being so hyper-focused on the numbers.
Yeah, I think the number is an essential part of it. You have to have some concrete measurement of how you're doing, but there are other measurements too. Just how you feel about yourself, what you're able to do that you weren't able to do before. You know, as I've incrementally lost weight, what I've noticed, the biggest thing is that so many things that used to hurt don't hurt anymore. You know, like I had an Achilles in my right ankle that just used to really bother me for years. And now it doesn't hurt anymore. If I go for a walk, I never even feel it. And so those things have sort of shown up as concrete results of me living a healthier, slimmer lifestyle as well, that aren't the number themselves, but are certainly part of the result.
Tommy Tomlinson is our guest. The name of the book is The Elephant in the Room, One Fat Man's Quest to Get Smaller in a Growing America. Are you comfortable with that term fat?
I am. I'm used to it. I've been called it lots of times over the years. And I understand that other people aren't. And so that's, you know, it's all whatever you want to use and whatever you feel comfortable with. I feel the way I feel about a lot of sort of controversial words or things like that, that if you're part of the family, you have the sort of license to use it. And people from the outside should be much more careful about it. And so I feel comfortable calling myself fat, overweight or obese always sounded a little gross to me, I guess.
Yeah.
And I never liked that one, but certainly overweight is a factual description of what I am.
And as the stores call it, big and tall. You're what, 6'1"?
I'm 6'1", yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's tall.
Tall-ish, I would say.
Yeah, tall-ish. And then, and big. So those are accurate. In the telling of the book, the other thing I found interesting is that you write this from a point of as it's ongoing. I mean, you're not done, right? This isn't something where you write to tell us this is how I did and I'm all done now. Thank you very much.
Right. A couple of reasons for that. First of all, the way I set out to do it would take me a long time to get to some endpoint, if there even is an endpoint. But part of what I wanted to show was how it progresses over time. This book is basically taking a year of my life and alternating sort of the bigger picture of how I think about things and how I've come to understand myself a little better with month-to-month sort of progress reports, basically. And so you see over time how I'm doing, but you also kind of go into the bigger picture, the more universal things that I think apply to everybody. So I'm still, you know, if you run my picture today or if you see me on the street, you would still call me fat, obese, whatever. I'm a ways from being where I want to be, but I certainly have progressed a long way from where I started.
You talk about in the book that overweight people are now a solid majority in America, and you say that it makes sense that there's an increasing movement to defend fatness and even celebrate it. You say, I don't want the world to expand to make room for me. It's not good for me and it's not good for the world. I need to make myself fit. That's not comforting to some outdated notion of what the human body should look like or aiming for some unattainable standard. It's just trying to walk through the world without a headwind. It's being not so worried about going to every new place or trying any new thing. So how hard is that? In our society and in our culture, even, and this is what I find so interesting about the book, because so many of us are heavy, so many of us are overweight, yet there still is a culture where that is bad and often looked down on.
I should say first, to sort of respond to my own words there, I guess, that, you know, there's a movement, for lack of a better word, sort of the fat positivity movement that I encourage and believe in, where people who feel like they are overweight or kind of overweight by our cultural standards, but they're healthy and happy, and they're fine with what they are. And I totally support that and believe in it. What I felt for me personally is that it wasn't just that. It was, my weight is and has been dangerous to me. And it has made the people around me, the people who care about me, the people who love me, it has caused them undue worry and you know, fear that I'm not going to be around much longer. And so I was having a negative effect on the world in that way. And so what I've searched for and what I've hoped for is a world where people who are overweight and feel happy where they are can be accepted and celebrated. But people like me who are trying to get to a more reasonable weight and a more reasonable level of health can also be encouraged and supported. And I think that is something that we have a ways to go.
Absolutely. You know, I was at a theater recently, and I was seeing a show on Broadway, and I was sitting there, and there was a woman next to me, and she became very abrupt and quite upset that I was, to use her words, oozing over into her space.
Mm-hmm. That's happened to me many, many times.
Right. And I, you know, to the point, like if I go to a movie or something, I always try to sit in the back and not, so I'm not, because I'm 6'6" and I'm big, I'm heavy. So I, you know, you don't want to put people in that position. And yet you also don't want to be, you know, chastised while you've paid hundreds of dollars to see a show. How do we change that, do you think? How do we change that overall understanding that, yes, we have it within our capacity to change our size, and yet how do we make the culture more understanding, more supportive, and ultimately more empathetic? And I guess we could say that about anything.
Well, I was going to say that applies to many things in life where we could all use a little bit more understanding about what other people are going through. And one of the things I hope that people who read this book or people who hear about it understand is that the things I talk about don't just apply to people who are overweight. That if you have a problem with alcohol or drugs or gambling or whatever it is, the symptoms and the sort of underlying, I think, needs and desires that drive those things are similar in a lot of people. And everybody has something. You know, even the most judgmental person in the world who thinks they're, you know, fairly perfect walking through life, they have their own problems. They have their own hurdle that they can't quite get over. And it's easy for us to see somebody else's problem and say, why can't they fix that? It's much harder for us to sort of self-reflect about our own flaws. And I think the more that we do that and understand that we have something going on inside ourselves too, it helps us look at other people with a little bit more kindness and compassion. And I think that's where it starts.
Were you heavy as a kid?
Always. I've always been heavy. Mm. I've never been skinny at any level.
So that has an impact, right? I mean, growing up with that and hearing other kids and what you can and what you cannot do, that is different than having at some point in your life being whatever normal is, but of being of a healthy weight, and then moving into a different range.
Yeah, I mean, I think there for some people they had some inflection point in their life where they gained a lot of weight. For women, obviously, after a pregnancy, you know, that's really hard to lose that weight. For guys, sometimes as they get older, or if they have an injury, or, you know, just settling into a sort of a lazier life after being more active. There are lots of factors that cause that. You know, I've been dealing with it my whole life. I've never known what it would be like to be not fat. And so in some ways, I think it's a little easier for me to deal with it because it's something I've always dealt with. But regardless of the reason, you know, we're all kind of dealing with the same issues in a lot of ways. And so I think it's helpful to kind of understand one another on that level.
Tommy Tomlinson is our guest. The name of the book is The Elephant in the Room, One Fat Man's Quest to Get Smaller in a Growing America. So let us talk about that growing America. You write about this. I mean, we don't want to cast blame, and yet our culture, our society does not make it easy for people to lose weight. It is a culture that is indulgent, and while, again, we don't want to say it's their fault, we have to take personal responsibility, but it isn't easy.
We have this incredible abundance. You know, at no time in human history has food been more available, cheaper, and tastier. I talk some about the fast food industry in the book, and, you know, billions of dollars of research and development have gone into making fast food taste incredible and to make it, addictive in some way so that you come back and you want more. That's a very hard cultural tide to swim through. And, you know, and there's advertising for all this stuff that is, you know, if you just watch TV for more than 10 minutes a day, you're going to see an ad for a fast food joint or a Chili's or, you know, a breakfast cereal for kids and all those sorts of things or sodas or beer. And so the images and the messages that we get all day long are indulge in this stuff. It's great. It's tasty. And it's part of a good day and camaraderie with your friends. Everybody get together after work and go have a meal. And the fact is, all those things are true. You know, it is good to go hang out with your buddies after work and, you know, split a, you know, a order of chicken wings and a couple of beers or whatever it is that, you know, you like the most. What they don't talk about as much is the cost of that. And the cost of that is that, as you said, basically a majority of Americans now are overweight. Children are becoming overweight at a much faster pace, and there's no particular end in sight to it. You know, the food is not going to become less abundant or less tasty. There's not going to be less advertising in the near future for those things. There are some healthier trends, like calorie counts in menus and things like that, but it's still going to be for a long, long time something that all of us who have trouble with our weight are really going to have to fight hard to get on the other side of.
So riddle me this. Why is it that so many of us are big, are heavy, are overweight, and yet we can't go into an average American shopping mall and find clothes that fit us? We can't, God forbid, get a seat in an airplane that will seat us comfortably. We can't even, I don't know about you, good luck getting into a car. I find that interesting. You would think there, at very least, and I'm not arguing against getting healthy, but as healthy as I get, I'm still going to be 6'6". It's also interesting to me that there are people who are big, who are tall, and yet we don't market to them.
The economics of it, I think, have not quite caught up in a lot of industries, but it is catching up in some. For example, movie theaters, as you mentioned earlier, the seats are wider now than they used to be. And the armrests often lift up.
Yeah.
You know, seats, I did a little study on this in college football stadiums, where like in Notre Dame Stadium, they actually, which is just benches, there are no individual seats, they redrew the lines on the benches a few years ago because they knew people were getting bigger. And so in some ways that movement is happening. There are stores now, especially with the internet, where even if you're in a small town, you can order clothes that fit you. It's difficult, but you can do it. But the trends, you're right, are still the other way because, you know, the economics of it, people don't want to take out seats in a movie theater or an arena or something because they want the most people in there possible.
Right.
And so they know that people who are overweight, like me, will jam ourselves into those seats because we want to experience those things. And so it's that tug of war between, do I want to do this thing badly enough to suffer the way I'll have to suffer to do it? And I think, you know, companies, businesses have taken advantage of that tug of war.
What ultimately do you hope people take from the book and take from your ongoing story?
A couple of things. One thing is, and I know it sounds like a cliche, but the one thing is that you're not alone in this, that so many people are struggling with this, and we can all see the external part of that. You can just walk down the street, and it's obvious that a lot of people are overweight. What I hope this book gets at a little bit is that internal struggle too, the thoughts, fears, dreams, insights that we may have about this stuff that maybe other people think, I don't know if anybody else is thinking that. Well, I hope this book says that they are. And then the other thing is, I hope it leads people to find their own way to a healthier lifestyle that's not so trained in on the fad of the day or whatever the best-selling weight loss book is or any of that sort of thing, to find their own path. You know, I have chosen not to have weight loss surgery, but I know a lot of people who have who've succeeded with it. That's not a path I have chosen for myself, but it's a path that's available. So I think there's something out there for everyone that can help them get over this hump. And I guess part of what I like this book to be about is the idea that it's worth it to keep trying.
The name of the book is The Elephant in the Room, One Fat Man's Quest to Get Smaller in a Growing America. The book is published by Simon & Schuster. Tommy Tomlinson, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I wish you all the best with the book and with your efforts, and I appreciate you sharing with us this morning.
Joe, the pleasure was mine. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, The Elephant in the Room by Tommy Tomlinson. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.